Welcome to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Your host, Carl Nordgren, will teach you how to take an expansive view on what it means to be creative and entrepreneurial. Carl is an entrepreneur, novelist, and a lifelong student. For 20 years, he has been learning how to help folks grow their creative capacities. Now, here's Carl.
Yes, thank you very much for coming, folks. This is Exploring Your Creative Genius. I'm Carl Nordgren. I hope you're having a wonderful weekend. This is the show that refuses to define creativity for you because it's too important for me to define it for you. I want you to develop your own multifaceted, situationally intelligent, dynamic understanding of what it means to be creative. So I accomplish that on your behalf by giving you lots of perspectives, lots of behaviors that so you can craft your own understanding. And one of the very best ways to do that for you is to bring in guests. And I've got just a wonderful guest for you today, as you'll soon discover. His name is John Swansea. Thank you very much, John, for being here with us. John has a long career as an engineer and an industrial designer, both at IBM and Lenovo. I'm really interested in hearing about his industrial design experiences. John has been granted over 50 patents and dozens of awards for design and innovation. He's an entrepreneur. He's an educator. He teaches design and innovation. He's had a stint at Kenan Flagler's online MBA program, so we always want to make sure that we've got our good UNC connection here on this show. We love UNC so much. Thank you so much, John, for being here with us today. I really appreciate it.
Great to be here. I'm looking forward to
it. In earlier conversations that we've had, John, I remember having just a whole lot of interest in some of the earlier childhood experiences you had experiencing your creativity, learning about creativity as a child. I'd love for the listeners to hear about that, about your family and your introduction to all things creative.
Sure. Yeah, I grew up in a small town in New England, and kind of all around me were kind of the idea of designing and inventing and making things. My grandfather was a jewelry designer. My other grandfather was a car mechanic and machinists, and elsewhere in my background were glass blowers, and even one relative that was a co-founder of Gillette. Invented something to do with the replaceable razors.
Oh, whoa.
So there was always this kind of, you know, in the background, in the basement would be boxes of tools and half-made machines that people had invented. And one specific thing that I'm reminded of is back then we didn't have the internet. We didn't have a lot of the things we have today. And when I was a little kid, I would go over to my father and say, I'm bored. And he would say, why don't you go down in the basement and make something? And so I thought, well, okay. And I went down there and, you know, there were tools and pieces of metal and wood and things. And so I just would make stuff. I made a chess set once. I made dozens of boat models.
Chess set meaning the individual players?
Yeah.
How did you craft the players?
Well, I didn't actually do a very good job of it. My father cut them into like wood cubes.
Okay.
And then I would cut and shave and sculpt.
Carved everything out that didn't look like a horse.
Yeah. But more of my intent was things like boat models. And I would carve them and make them and then go and test them. Like sailboats.
Cool.
And I'd race them and figure out, well, that one was too heavy in the front. That didn't work. Or this tipped over. And so I was continuously learning about materials and physics and everything, even though I didn't know about it.
You were learning without knowing the language. You were sensing it. You were feeling all these forces and feeling these ideas. In the early part of your introduction to this childhood, the phrase that just came into my head is one I haven't heard much recently, but it sure seemed like you were representing Yankee ingenuity. Remember the old days of ingenuity? And that's up there, right, in New England where you were.
Very much.
I loved that phrase, once upon a time. So you were building boats at any point large enough for you to take off in?
Yeah, actually, kind of the end of my boat is during senior year, I built a boat. Like a full-sized speedboat, which was made out of plywood, and I had no plans. I didn't do a very good job. I hadn't learned how to work with fiberglass yet. So it was made of duct tape and canvas and pieces of aluminum, and I took the outboard motor off my mother's boat and put it on there and zoomed around in this thing and tested it and figured out how fast it would go and how to make it turn better.
and it actually was seaworthy.
For short periods of time. Looking back on it now, it was just ridiculous because I was just making it up as I went along.
And so was there a collaborative thing going on? Did you have a group of friends that were also interested in these activities with you, or is this something that it was mostly a solo pursuit for you?
No, it was just me.
Yeah.
Just me. And I would take apart bicycles and outboard motors, and I was always taking stuff apart, figure out how it worked, trying to modify it, make it go faster.
We were talking about that also in an earlier conversation about how what an obvious early indicator of somebody who could become an engineer. As a child, they like to take stuff apart, right? And sometimes can put it back together again.
Yeah, that was me. My dad had an old, he didn't think of it as this, but it was a junk car in the garage. And I would just go out there and unscrew things and take them off of it just by myself.
Oh, cool.
For fun.
And you never broke it?
It never went back together. It never ran again.
Well, if you've had such a – when you had such a – since you had such a creative childhood, I would imagine you're so used to now teaching yourself, it sounds like, right? How does your formal education show up in this development of the creative person that you are?
Well, the next step for me is I wanted to study engineering because I figured that would reveal to me the secrets of how all of this stuff worked.
Okay.
I was fortunate to go to Harvard and get my engineering degree, but I also took a lot of classes in art and design because I knew I wanted to design things that combined an aesthetic component with the practicality. And so I didn't know there was such a thing as industrial design. I didn't know what it was called. So right. I was just taking engineering and art classes, trying to meld it together in my head. And at that time, the school was very rote and theoretical.
Okay.
In its approach towards engineering. I was able to ride my bike down Mass Ave and take a class at MIT on machine design, which was much more hands-on and practical. Okay. And I could really engage with that. One thing I would say also in my – all of my – through my education, my most inspiring teachers were my art teachers, where they – something about that process of – them teaching us stuff, we make things, we get feedback on it, we make something else, was very inspiring. One I'll call out was William Ryman was my drawing professor in college, and he taught me how to quickly and precisely visualize things with drawing and sketching and how to develop and refine those skills. Cool. And I use the things he taught me every day.
Cool. Well, we're going to stay on that idea of expressing your ideas visually. When we come back from the break, folks, please come on back. You're going to hear more from John.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
So during the break, folks, welcome back from the break. And during the break, I was talking to John about imagining that the rigor of a Harvard engineering curriculum would be such that it would be very difficult to fold in these other classes. And he acknowledged that was so. So I want to hear a little bit more about that. And then we're going to transition to the portion of his education, your education, John, that was about you really entering the world of industrial design.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I finished undergrad, I figured the fastest way to get a job was with engineering and not the art side. And so I went to work at IBM, had a very interesting initial job involved in robotics and three-dimensional CAD systems and all that.
So remind us, when is this? Give us a sense.
80s.
In the 80s, okay.
Yeah. And so that was very much like R&D, technical lab kind of stuff, and robotics and designing machines. And that was good. But what was missing there for me was the aesthetic side. And I was writing papers and speaking at conferences and trying to get patents. And I wasn't making anything that anybody would use. And so I was kind of driven to make things that were useful that people would experience. And so I stumbled across, through some friends of mine, the industrial design department at IBM. And I looked around like, wow, this is great. I want to do this. Can I transfer in this department? And they said, you know, not so fast. You know, we all went to school for this, and you'll have to go to school to study this. I said, okay. And so that I left that and went back to design school at Rhode Island School of Design.
Yeah, what a great school.
Which was as far as you could possibly get from engineering. It was like the flakiest, artiest place you could go because I needed to get myself out of the engineering groove and to learn this completely different method. So it kind of intentionally made it difficult for myself, which in the short term was pretty painful, but eventually worked out. And so the people there pushed me really hard.
And when you say, excuse me quick, when you say you made it painful for yourself, it was just that dramatic shift from what you were studying to what you're studying now. That's
yes.
The painful piece. Okay.
Yeah, and exactly. Right at the beginning, I would have an assignment and they could see me approaching it like an engineer would. And they said, stop right there. You know, we will break you. You cannot rely on the strengths you already have. You have to start in a completely different area.
Good for you.
And so now I'm competing with undergraduates and other people who have art backgrounds and art degrees, and I don't. And so I was terrible. I mean, it was obvious that I was not as good as the people around me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a painful process mentally to go through. And they really intentionally pushed me super hard. And I'm grateful to them for right. that. But it was difficult on the ego at the time.
Sure.
There's some examples of my thesis advisor was Bob O'Neill, was a great inspiration to me also. He was also one of the most non-engineering minds there, very much towards kind of open thinking and open-ended thinking. And some of the things, you know, he would see me approaching what I was doing in a kind of a conventional way. And one of the things I remember he said to me was, John, you're going and spending the day in the jungle, and then you're going back home at night. I need you to spend the night in the jungle.
Oh.
And what he meant by that was just to, you know, abandon all of my safety net and things that I was used to and just embrace this total unknown
yes.
risk.
Wow.
And that was a pretty powerful way. And he had a way of saying things where you didn't really understand what he meant until about 6 months later.
So and so that challenge impacted you? You changed
yeah.
your behavior with that challenge?
Yeah. What I learned is that, in this case, it was 2 years, is not long enough to learn how to design.
Okay.
I mean, you need 5, 10, 20.
Plus all that background of art classes, et cetera.
Sure. And what I learned you had to do is design every day. Everything you do is design. Design the food on your plate, the furniture in your apartment, where you live, what you do, the clothes you wear, everything is design.
Right.
And that total immersion in that idea that you are kind of creating everything around you,
right.
you know, in an intentional way and trying to be unique and different and new and kind of iterative about it.
Right.
It took me a while to get there.
Well, I wouldn't teach my students design, but I wanted when I was at Duke, but I wanted them to have an intentional, mindful experience with design. And so I would always have a week. They would keep a creative journal for the whole semester, and 1 week was design week, and all their entries that 1 week had to be associated with their interaction with design. And I would remind them that not just products are designed, right? Experiences are designed as well. So if you're in a line and customer service is clearly not designed very well to handle you, why is that? You know, what can you learn from that? Or if you pick up a tool and it just feels so good in your hand and you just know the energy is balanced exactly the way it's supposed to be, think about that, right? Mm-hmm. So as you say, everything all around us is designed.
And particularly what was unique is the process to get there and how it differs from at least how I understood engineering. In engineering, you have a set of specs or requirements, and once you develop something that meets those specs, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
In design, you're never done. It could always be better.
Right.
At the time you finish a project, you'll put it aside. You'll come back a month later and say, oh, my God, why did I do it that way? Why didn't I do this? Why didn't I add this other thing? Why didn't I make this proportion a little more sleek, et cetera? And so that idea of iterative exploration is a key part of this design idea.
Good.
And going back to Bob O'Neill, when I was struggling at the beginning, I remember one time he came over to my drawing table, my desk, and he saw me scribbling away at something, and he flipped through the pages, through the stack, and made an X about 15 pages in.
An X on each page?
No, just an,
X on the 15th page. Okay.
And he said, you know, get to here. You know, I want you to get all the bad ideas out of your pencil.
Out of your pencil.
And so he was just telling me just to produce.
Nice.
Go through it.
Great.
You know, and that idea of getting the bad ideas out of your pencil.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Well, folks, we're getting close to a break here. We're not quite there yet, but I'm going to let you all know that when you come back from the break, John's going to be sharing some advice with you. He's going to be talking about what's next on his agenda, and he's also going to tell me what he thinks of this Buckminster Fuller quote. Buckminster Fuller, who, folks, of course, is an iconic industrial designer, Buckminster Fuller apparently said, "I never set out to create something beautiful, but it, when I was finished, if it wasn't beautiful, I knew I had done something wrong." So ruminate on that a little bit as we go to the break, folks. Come on back. Thanks for listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome, folks. Thanks for coming back from the break. We've been listening to John Swansea talk about his experiences as an engineer, as an industrial engineer, as a creative young man living up in New England. We ended the last segment by me sharing with John this quote that Buckminster Fuller said, that he never set out to design something that was beautiful, but when he was finished, if it wasn't beautiful, he knew something was wrong. You have some thoughts about that quote?
Yeah, I think that is very much something I believe in, and how I tried to approach it, is if you start with what it looks like, the approach is very arbitrary and cosmetic and superficial. And then later on, you're trying to force fit that onto some function, and it won't work.
Perfect.
I much prefer the idea of thinking about what is the essential function that this is supposed to do,
right?
Whether that is ergonomic or functional or structural or whatever it is.
Great.
And solve that in a way that's better than has ever been done before.
I love
it. It's more compact. It's lighter. It's faster. It's stronger, whatever. But if you've trained yourself with the aesthetic approaches to things like line and proportion, you'll be making it beautiful as you go along. And at the end, if it's not beautiful, you have done something wrong.
Yes, I love that. Thank you for stating that so well. So folks, if you've been listening, you know that the last five or six times I've had a guest on the show, I have asked them to find themselves in a six creative types document that I share with people. Those six creative types are you motivated to be creative because you're an artist? You have this vision that you want to share with the world. Are you motivated to be creative because you're a warrior? You want to get out and compete. You're motivated to be creative because you're an explorer. You want to go to the ends and bring back what you've learned. Is it because you are a cultivator? You like bringing the right, you like to find an idea and develop it, right? You want to develop it and make it even better. Or are you an orchestrator? You're really good at bringing folks together to get this project started just right. And finally, are you motivated because you're a saint? You want to make the world a better place. I've yet to find anybody who's only one of these things. I've asked John to find himself in this typography. And so what did you find, John?
This is a great way to think about it. And I really had to think a bit about this. First off, there's definitely a fair amount of warrior. I'm just a super competitive person in sports and everything else. And so that's in there. Explorer, I can relate to that too also, because I'm trying to discover things. I'm trying to do something that hasn't been done before, to tread new ground in something.
I would have been surprised if I hadn't heard Explorer, knowing what I know about you.
And then the last one is artist, where there's a visual and an aesthetic that kind of almost goes beyond words. If you do something really right, it just sings aesthetically. And so that's kind of the cherry on top, if I can achieve that.
Outstanding. Well, we want to hear what's coming next, but first, do you have any, I mean, you've given us so much advice in your telling of your story. Any last piece of creative advice for folks?
Two things. One of them is to try to maintain the limberness of mind, is the way I describe it, is to not fall into any kind of conventional thinking. Always be willing to question everything. And the next bit is this idea of iteration.
Okay.
And that means whatever the first concept you're going to do is going to be wrong.
Right.
So just make it fast, quickly, right. And then make another one.
Very
and
nice.
Then compare them and then test them until one breaks and then make another one and then race them to see which one is the fastest or the best or people like it the most.
I like that racing idea.
And then so you're just continuously in this process of making, building, breaking, yeah. learning from, getting feedback yeah. on.
And the lines between each one of those phases are not clear lines, right?
Right. And you're just continuously churning this around until at the end of this process, which is often just driven by a deadline, you end up with the best possible design given the constraints.
Very nice. Well, we've got a minute left, and John's got a really interesting next activity that is going to be happening for him this summer or that he's going to be leading this summer. I just think this is such a cool summer program that you're going to be leading. Tell us about that.
Well, there's a school in Denmark called DTU. It's kind of like the MIT of Denmark, and they have a summer intensive engineering program that covers a lot of these same ideas of innovation, prototyping, and pilot and entrepreneurship. And I'm going to be kind of an extra guest lecturer in that program for about 5 weeks.
Outstanding. Outstanding. And you'll be there or you'll be here?
I'll be there.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Oh, wonderful. That's going to be awesome. Well, I want to talk to you when you come on back. Folks, this has been Exploring Your Creative Genius. I'm going to get John back for another show. He's got more to share with us about his work teaching, his work studying creative cultures and other businesses. So, John, you'll come on back for another show?
Sure.
Thanks very much. And you all have a great rest of your weekend.
This has been Exploring Your Creative Genius on 97.9 The Hill. You can listen to other episodes on chapelboro.com.